Welcome back to Gray Area, you guys. My name is Sierra, and today we have Kai William joining us. Kai is a house producer and DJ based out of Brooklyn. He's currently, if I'm correct, joining us live from his spring tour, though, so you're probably not in Brooklyn at the moment.
I am in Brooklyn. I am fortunate enough to get to come back here most of the weeks between the dates, spend some time in my studio.
Oh, nice. I know, yeah, because there are quite, you have some big breaks on this tour, I've noticed. You, like, play a show, and you have about a week or so until the next one. That must be kind of nice.
Yeah, it's good. I get to come back. I'm, like, just, I like making music more than anything, more than performing. So it's nice for me to be able to keep that steady flow of productivity and have a couple days between to do that.
Yeah. So how's your schedule kind of looking right now? It's like you play a show, you come back, and you produce, then you go play a show, kind of like that?
Yeah, so typically what my weeks have been, I mean, this is only the second week in, but what it's been like just like this far is I'll go do my shows Monday. I take pretty much completely off to myself to just rest and just take time off. And then on Tuesdays and Wednesdays and Thursdays, I'll do a mix of producing. I run my record label, so I have a lot of like admin work to do for that. And then as well as I do a lot of teaching and lessons and audio engineering as well. So it's kind of just like this huge jumble of production. Music production type stuff during the week and then perform on the weekends.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. You're busy.
Yeah.
So is this your first headlining tour that you've done?
Yeah. First time headlining tour. I've done a couple of shows here, there out of state, but mostly most of my shows for my entire career have been based here in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. But this is the first time where like I'm getting to go and be the headliner. It's been only three shows as far, but they've all been like super fun. It's cool. It's really cool to see that I have like actual fans outside of New York, because you can only really tell so much from like social media and the streaming numbers, and it kind of doesn't really hit you until people come up to you and they're like, "Hey, I listen to your music all the time. Like, really like what you're doing." Like, that is such a different feeling than just seeing. Like, I've had some great success with streaming and Beatport and all that, but to actually see that in person is such a different feeling.
Yeah, it's like your work out in the world that has to feel super cool and connecting with people from all over. I wonder, is when you go on a tour, is that very different than just playing kind of one-off clubs? Like, is the production kind of the same? The set kind of the same? Is that very different?
Yeah, I think my sets are pretty similar for the last three shows across the board. Obviously, like, I don't think anyone's been to like every show, so like I have the ability to kind of showcase these same tracks, obviously play them in different orders and stuff, but mm-hmm. I really do need to read the room depending on it, because one of the shows went a little bit heavier, one of them went a little bit lighter, just kind of based on whatever was going on in the room at that time.
Mm-hmm. So where are you headed to next?
This weekend I have Vancouver, and ooh, then that's on Saturday. I'm just gonna spend the whole weekend out. I'm trying to like take advantage of my time out in these places, since I, like you said earlier, I have this like little gap between shows during the weeks and stuff. So if I don't have two shows in the weekend, I'll try to spend the whole, the whole time in that location. Mm-hmm. So I'm doing Friday to Monday in Vancouver. So I'm excited for that. And then I'm back in Brooklyn for March 3rd. So that show is not announced yet, but it should be by the time this goes live. So that's going to be with me and John Summit at 99 Scott Warehouse in Brooklyn, which I'm very excited for. For me to play in that nice warehouse there. And with John, obviously, is going to be a great time.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be awesome. I wish. You're going to be closer to me. I live in Portland, Oregon, so I don't know if you'll be in BC or Washington, but you'll be like right by me.
Yeah. I love Portland. Such a cool city. It kind of feels like a big Brooklyn out there, actually. There's like a lot of cool breweries and artists and stuff out there. I enjoyed my time there when I went there.
Oh, good. Well, you skipped us this time. It's fine. We'll see you next time. Well, cool. I hope the rest of your tour goes well. I want to kind of backtrack now a little bit to talk about when you first started DJing, because if people don't know, if you're watching, you actually started when you were like 11 or 12, right? With a family friend. You were DJing kind of bar mitzvahs and weddings and things like that, which is obviously so much different than the kind of work that you're doing now. You know, you play for Elro and these massive festivals. So I wonder maybe how that transition was for you, if it was ever maybe a little bit scary or intimidating, or maybe, I don't know, if you have any advice for people that maybe want to make that transition.
Yeah, I think for my personal story in that, it was never really intimidating for two reasons. One, I'm just a pretty confident person in things like I know I'm like pretty decent at. So I just am very confident in what I'm doing. And additionally, in terms of like the crowd sizes, it was never like one and then boom, like big festival. So it kind of started in the weddings and bar mitzvah space with like the family friend. Then eventually went to college, you know, did like the dorm room parties. And then I joined a fraternity and then I played parties for them. And then like played a couple bars around town, around school. And then I got offered to do a monthly residency at somewhere down in Atlantic City called Harrah's Pool Party. Mm-hmm. And so I did that once a month. And then I took like a year off. I started to explore photography and that was fun, but it wasn't really fully for me, more of a hobby. And then I started doing bars again and then just started slowly scaling up. So it was never like I had to go from playing a room of like 200 people to like 6,000, 7,000 people. It was kind of like this nice steady growth. But in terms of my advice for anyone who's wanting to get into going from that more like corporate style playing into like the more nightclub like scene and stuff like that, is just educate yourself on the music, go to the events and kind of like make yourself aware of what's going on and see like how people are playing and how that crowd reacts. I think that's something that really helps people understand what this is all about, is not only being an artist, but also being part of the community and attending shows, I think is super important.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's how you're going to learn, you know, what people like too, and what a good set looks like and what people resonate with and they don't. I think that trajectory, that makes a whole lot of sense, because it wasn't even then just straight from, you know, the wedding top 40. I don't even know what people play at weddings anymore, to then like, you know, clubs, that little interim with frat houses and bars and stuff like that. I feel like that's kind of where you can dabble in both. There's probably a lot of the hit songs in there, but then you can throw in a couple, you know, edits and remixes and that. So mm-hmm. that kind of seems like a natural progression too, which is cool.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it's a good space to kind of test things out and see what works and what doesn't. I'm super like happy with the way my progression went. I think it is a result. I mean, everything's a direct result of what your past is, but I'm really happy that that was kind of my path and it was sort of easing into it rather than being thrown to the wolves. I think there's pros and cons to both, but I'm happy with the way mine went.
Did you ever, I'm sure you have more social awareness than this, but did you ever maybe throw in just like, I don't know, a Skrillex song at like a bar mitzvah or something, and then be like, let's see what they think.
Yeah, actually. So when I started like to get more curious, I was at a bar mitzvah actually. And I downloaded a bunch of house records and just like edits, and it just like wasn't working. Cause like that's not what they want to hear. They want to hear like stuff they're really familiar with, which is like, that's fine. But I remember like, and it was at that time where I'm like, all right, I think I need to start pushing and like looking into this whole new type of sound and style that I like. I think I was around 16 or 17 at that time, like in high school and stuff like that. And yeah, I remember specifically my boss looking at me and just going like, you can't play this. And I was like, why not? And he's like, because no one's having fun. So...
But I am.
Yeah. I think that was a great learning experience too, for self-awareness and realizing like it's not all about what I want to play, which is kind of like how I've developed my style as well, just having like a wide variety of music in which I enjoy, that I know I can be prepared to play a room at any time, no matter what it is.
Yeah. And that's a killer skill. I want to know too, because you started as a DJ and then moved into a producer. And I know a lot of artists that have done both, you know, both options. I wonder if your time first as a DJ influenced your production style at all.
Absolutely. I think I actually love this question, because it kind of, you get two different outcomes from the producer. So people who are DJs first typically understand how a dance record should be arranged and made. However, I think it limits their creativity side. I think someone who's never been on a dance floor has less rules. So I find typically those people have much more creative music and less boundaries than those like people like myself, where it's kind of like, cool, I know I should bring this in here and take this out here. And I think the tension should be here. Like when you don't have that sort of limitations, you kind of can be a bit more creative. And I've been trying to teach myself to kind of let go of some of those rules. But at the same time, someone on the other side will just then struggle to translate that idea into like a club record. So I think there's pros and cons to both of those.
Yeah. And you see, you know, firsthand, you had such a long time to experience, you know, what worked and what people liked and the kind of formats and the structures that people are looking for on the dance floor. So I'm sure that was helpful too.
Definitely. Yeah. Super helpful.
So, and two, talking about your production now, you've kind of started to develop this iconic sound for yourself, you know, through your sets and your songs. You know, you hear those Kai William drums, you know, and there's this like mark of signature there. But at the same time, like you were saying, you want to keep freshness and uniqueness in the kind of styles and influences you're drawing in. So how do you find that balance between like branding and, you know, solidifying your musical style and keeping things interesting?
Yeah. So in terms of my workflow, I'll just sort of make my drums, like my typical drums and how that sounds. And I find that when you have a good set of drums, whether it's, you know, my style or any other style, like most things go over top of that. So it's kind of like make my drum groove and then just kind of let the creativity like take over after that. Try different things. I always try to try something, one new thing every time I produce. And that typically helps me keep it going. And I think a big thing that plays into that is education and always trying to learn. You try the same things over and over again, you're going to make the same music over and over again. So I'm either trying to do new tutorials or go find new artists, go see music outside of my genre. I'm actually, lately, I've been enjoying going to events or seeing live music that I don't typically see out, like going to like a jazz night or something like that. Because I think that's really what, when it starts to open up your creativity. Otherwise, you're going to make this, not that there's anything wrong with making the same type of like similar music over and over. There's a lot of successful artists that do it. That's just not what I'm personally interested in. And I find that that will limit your appeal and to kind of reach multiple audiences of people. So that's kind of what I'm interested in personally.
Yeah. Well, and house music itself is innately kind of repetitive in that way. So even if you add this, you know, the smallest little nuance, then, you know, people notice it and like, oh, but I didn't hear this sound before. And this is really
exactly.
cool.
Exactly. Yeah, I totally agree with that.
Yeah, I know you you mentioned before you're, you know, really into hip hop and other kinds of genres and stuff, too. And I think you can tell, you can hear kind of that influence and that love for that style of music, especially in your drums, too. But yeah, I agree. You're supposed to kind of, I don't know, listening to other things kind of widens your horizon and you can like bring in lots of different influence and experience into your music and then, yeah, reach more people like that. Exactly.
Absolutely. I totally echo that.
Who are you, who were some of your favorite hip hop people you're listening to right now?
At this very moment, let me look at my Spotify here. I've just listened to some music. I mean, I've always listened, I love Mac Miller. He's like my number one artist ever of all time. Yeah. He's just been super influential to me. So it's people like him. I like a lot of 90s stuff. Obviously like Tupac, Biggie, that whole type of music is great. I found this guy Pete Rock the other day. Really like him a lot.
Yes, his instrumental tracks are so great.
Yeah, it's so super super vibey stuff, and it's got great vocals on top of it as well. It's funny because I think I was originally so into house music because I really like instrumentals and just music, and I was never really a lyricist person. Like, I remember growing up, like being with my friends in the car, and they would all sing the tracks, and I wouldn't know the words to the music, but I would know exactly how it sounds, and I would like be humming or like, you know, playing the guitar in the track or whatever while they're all singing, and I'm just like, oh, well, that's what I like. And I think as I've gotten older, I've grown an appreciation for like more poetic lyrics. So that's why I think like Tupac is such an incredible poet. And like, that's why I kind of got into more of like this Pete Rock recently and stuff like that. Just like listening to those lyrics, it kind of adds a whole new dimension to the music that I didn't once pay attention to in the past.
Yeah. I felt that a lot too. I was always more kind of a groove music person, and everyone in my family was like, oh, but listen to these words. And they were like, you know, hinged on the lyrics. And I was like, I just kind of want to dance. But yeah. But yeah, I think having both is really great too. But that's so cool. Yeah, I love Pete Rock. Not a lot of people usually know about him, but yeah, he makes some good stuff. And that Circles album by Mac Miller is like one of my all time favorites.
Yeah, it's all so great. He's just been such an influence and just in my music in general over my whole career.
Cool. Well, let's talk about your record label now, if you want. Kai, and actually, we both noticed before we jumped on that we both have Sanskrit tattoos, and I've seen your label name in the back. Rep. I've seen your label name in the back of little interviews and stuff. It's like, I wonder what that says. And I was like trying to decipher. So can you give us the deets? What's it about?
Yeah, for sure. I love telling this story because not a lot of people know it. So when I originally started the label, it was with somebody named Ramsey Neville. He's from here in Brooklyn, and he started the label before me. He only had one free download out, and it was a techno record, and he's always kind of been more into this techno sound. And He's dating this girl, Jess, who's of the culture, and he couldn't think of a name, so he started rattling off names, and that kind of would resonate with his music, and he makes dark techno at the time. Well, still does now, and I'll get into that in a second. But the word Andera means darkness. So we met during COVID, like right before that time, and we kind of didn't really have an idea where we wanted to take the sound, and I was just like, yeah, I want to make a label. He's like, just do it with me. And then we started to kind of develop this sound during COVID that was like easy listening because people weren't going out to clubs a lot. So kind of that style of like Chris Stussy, Prunk, Piv, like No Art, Anoder, and like all those guys. And then over time, it just kind of developed. Clubs opened up again, and then we got a little bit more like club driving. And then he eventually was like, yeah, my true passion is actually in techno, so you can kind of just take this and run with it. He's killing it. He's doing great. If anyone listening is into techno, check him out. His name's Ramsey Neville. But yeah, that's kind of like the story of how Andera started. Like I didn't have anything to do with the name of the label or any of the picking that, but I just decided to keep it. I think it looks cool. And I think our sound is now kind of circling back to that whole darkness thing. Actually, my release coming up on March 3rd is a bit darker. And then we signed a record from someone named Ben Kim, and his record's a bit darker, and then I'm just noticing these records are kind of having this more moody feel to them, so it's interesting how it kind of came full circle back around.
Yeah, and you need both. I know that's a big thing, you know, in Hindu culture as well. I got mine after I got done with my yoga teacher training, but so that whole idea of like darkness, you know, it's like you need both. I feel like a lot of times, especially in, you know, Western culture, we don't really honor that darkness a whole lot. We just want it to be happy and productive and like forward moving all the time. But that darkness is such a special place, especially with music, you know, and to have that kind of energy and that moodiness, it really taps into something that is really freaking cool. So that's cool. I love that story.
Yeah, I think it's also kind of, I don't know, I think it's important for labels to kind of keep their sound evolving and moving. I think it's really good for just the culture in general, to kind of pump new ideas and inspiration into other artists that are listening. Sometimes I feel like some of these like labels don't realize the kind of influence that they actually have on these people. So I think it's important to create outlets where people can feel inspired to do new things that haven't been done before, rather than doing the whole copy and paste, rinse and repeat method. I think that's a bit detrimental to the culture in general. So I try to do my part in being that outlet for people.
Yeah, allowing for innovation, super important. Mm-hmm. Yeah. On that note, how do you kind of go about your curation and your track selection? Because you're absolutely crushing it. You got like millions of streams, all these top 10 stuff. So how do you go about kind of picking which tracks you want to release?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it's kind of changed also since I started. Kind of when I started, it was like, oh, get my hands on whatever I can, because I had this weird experience of starting a label that most people don't. I started my label when I had one record out and I didn't really even know how to produce music properly. So at that time, it was like, find people who would be willing to trust me with their music and kind of take what I can. But like recently now I have the opportunity to be playing more shows and testing records out, but it really all comes down to whatever I truly believe in, mm-hmm. and kind of has that like sort of Kai William drums. But I'm very lenient with my label in terms of our sound. I just want to put out good music that I honestly believe in. And more importantly, with artists that I resonate with and get along with, because to me, like putting someone on my label is kind of like hiring an employee for a company. I want to make sure they're like someone who believes in the same like values and morals that I do as well, and trying to be in the same place. I feel like in my experience, I've released on labels where it's like kind of like, hey, cool, we'll put your record out. Whatever happens, happens. Like I like to go much further than that. So I like to, obviously the first thing is, you know, get the attention with the music and then figure out more about who they are and kind of talk to them before go ahead and signing it. I like to be very hands-on during the whole process of that too. I think that's super important. I think that kind of reflects in how well the record does as well, because you want to make sure both sides are happy, because if one side's happier than the other, then the record is only going to be pushed so hard by that one person rather than both being pushed super hard. So I want to make sure my artists are happy with their artwork, with the way the masters sound, with the way that we're promoting it. And just work very collaboratively. So to answer your question, obviously just in short, is just make sure that it's someone I personally would like to work with, as well as the music is something I believe in and want to put out.
That's awesome. Do you have any that are coming out? Well, if you care to share, any that are coming out kind of soonish that you're excited about?
I have my own on March 3rd, and then I have one from Ben Kim coming up in April, and then I have these guys down in Miami called Dustin Dell, who I love when artists will continually send me music for my label too. It shows they really want to be on, and these two kids from Miami, Dustin Dell, they have just sent me music probably for the last year now, probably over the course of like, I think, 7 demos or so, and then finally one worked. And I had gotten friendly with them over the process. And I think they're really good friends now too, because of that. And I'm excited to work with them on this. So that's just a really good example of that. And then we have a couple more pending after that, but nothing I can get really too into detail on, but yeah, we're in a nice spot. I don't really like to sign out more than, you know, 4 to 5 months, because there's so much good music out there right now. And things are so consistently changing, and I don't want to lock myself into a specific style or sound.
Yeah.
I remember when I first started a label, we signed out like 8 months ahead. And I was like, by the time the 8th record came, I'm like, oh, like this isn't, it's a great music, but it just didn't really work with what I was trying to do. So I think having that patience and discipline to not take everything that comes your way is important, because that also goes back to me being wanting to like be like, I'm super pumped, let's push this super hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really important thing to notice. Even for myself, obviously I'm not running a record label, but as a writer, I struggle with that a lot too, just taking on everything that I want to do, you know. It's like, oh yeah, I'll write about this, I'll write this one, I'll write this one, this one. And then it comes time for me to do it all. It's like, maybe I didn't need to do all of this, but having that selection, I think, is really important. And it shows you a vision too, which is really cool.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah, props to my manager, Griffin Lee, for instilling that in me, because I'm quite literally the most impulsive person I know. And he's taught me this sort of role of how important patience is. And it's been paying off, definitely.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Griffin. You taught us both something today. So a little bit more about Endera. I've noticed too, and I guess this kind of goes to what we were talking about, that dark side of the music, is that a lot of outlets and fans will kind of refer to your music and your label's music as still like underground house. And I'm curious if you just have any idea or opinion about what's considered underground, because obviously it's not like you're not successful. Like, you play at all these massive festivals, you're in the top 10. So it's like, what does underground even mean anymore?
Yeah, you know? I like this question. To be completely honest with you, I actually don't think we're underground. I think the term underground originally comes from like the term, like how accessible music is. I don't really think, like, it has this sort of like negative connotation that comes along with it towards like commercial music. And like with me and my label, I think because I'm based in the United States, most people are pretty unaware of what's going on outside of here. And that's where my influence comes from, is music outside of the United States. So I've kind of had this self-appointed role for myself where I want to blend the two worlds, so then I can kind of be this bridgeway for people to understand that there are different types of music and styles out there. So kind of going back to your other question too, when I decided to sign a record, it's like, okay, is this record going to resonate well with the people in the area in which I live in and I'm performing in? And is it also going to resonate with people who have inspired this music, so I can, you know, reach people outside of here too? And I think kind of being this like bridgeway gap to what's being like commercial and underground is kind of where we lie. But yeah, I wouldn't really call us underground, honestly. It's kind of funny, I kind of get this reputation that I'm like a minimal artist as well, but if you listen to my sets, it's a lot of just tech house, honestly. But I think there's this like relationship between like underground tech house being like UK style, and there's like more commercials, more American style. But yeah, I can see why people would consider it underground, but to me, underground is just how accessible your stuff is. And I would say, if you're looking for my label's music, you're going to find it very easily. It's not very hard to find it, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I don't know if that answers your question.
It does. Yeah. And there really wasn't a good answer. It's more just like a random thought, but, yeah, I think you're right. It brings up kind of this weird line between underground and commercial, and puts this like negative skew towards that music that is commercial and successful in a way, which I don't agree with either. Like, I like a lot of really popular music, even outside of house music, you know, but
yeah.
And too, I don't know, I don't feel like then if it is related to accessibility, which the term traditionally has been, it's like nothing's underground anymore. Then, like, you know, you can find everything on SoundCloud and YouTube, like nothing is.
Yeah, maybe that term is kind of in relation to like being able to like make it within that music, or like the finances involved, or like the spotlight, being able to have a spotlight on that music where you kind of have to, if there's no lane, you have to kind of go make it yourself. Because obviously, mm-hmm. if you're taking like, you know, the more typical claimed underground music and putting it on a big stage, it's probably not going to sell very well just because of what people are used to in that space. If that makes sense. But yeah, I definitely wouldn't consider us underground. It's just kind of putting out records that I like and playing records I like. And if people want to call that underground, cool. If they want to call it commercial, also fine by me. I think generalizing music to an extent definitely has a benefit, but I also think it's also can be pretty harmful too.
Yeah, for sure. That's something, yeah, that I know I think about often, especially as a music writer, you know, it's like, it's me, I'm part of the problem, because I have to find a way, you know, to communicate to people.
Yeah, it's important. It's definitely important to like categorize the music, for sure. People mm-hmm. have to know what they're talking about. Mm-hmm. But in doing that, there's a lot of like chefs in the kitchen who are like claiming things are one way and then they're another. It's just like finding, I wish there was a way to universally categorize it, but I guess that's also kind of the beauty in all this is like, there's so many opinions on what's this and what's that. And I think that's kind of the beauty of dance music specifically. There's just all these different genres and subgenres and cultures and communities within it. Yeah. I just sometimes wish there was more of a blend of all of it rather than seeming like cliques of people.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that's
fine. That's when I get really excited about it, is when I see the blend of stuff. You know, if I hear then all of it, like an opera techno song, or I went to a show last week where it was like Latin ska metal core kind of thing. I was just like, what? So when it's like when stuff comes together, I was like, this is really cool, because you see all those different influences in that genres that you know, but then you see them meld together in really weird ways. I don't know. That's the part that really excites me.
Yeah, it's like a giant buffet of music. It's really cool.
Yeah. That's a perfect segue. Actually, my favorite question to end with before we go into the speed round is, what excites you about the future of dance music?
What excites me about the future of dance music? Let me think. I think that it's become very accessible for people who want to pursue a career in this to be able to do it. You don't really need anybody besides yourself anymore. Obviously, it's good to have a team around you, but I think because it's so easy for someone to just pick up a laptop, you don't need a studio anymore. You need a laptop and headphones. There's so much good technology. Someone could pop up, make a track. You know, they can self-release it. They don't need a label anymore. Obviously, it helps. There's a lot of benefits, but there's a lot of really successful people out there who are all self-made and never worked with a record label. They do it all themselves. So yeah, I think that's what really excites me, is like it's so much easier for people to get involved. Maybe there's some bad things that come along with that, but I just try to keep look at the positives of it.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. That was the thing that came to my head. I was like, well, it's good that you're optimistic about that. I can see a lot of people, especially people that have already, you know, kind of clawed their way into it, that might be resentful towards that. They're like, anyone can do it.
Yeah, I just think the best response I have to people who think like that is like, you also have all these tools at your disposal. It's just your choice to not use them. So for example, if someone who's been like, you know, in it forever, and now there's this generation of like, you know, TikTok or influencer DJs, like, okay, that's not for you, but you have access to these tools too. Mm-hmm. They have just chosen to use them in their own way to benefit them, and now they're performing well. And if you don't like it, then that kind of sucks for you.
Yeah.
You know, those tools are there and you can learn how to use it and probably even boost your career. You know, if you're not interested in it, then you can't, I don't really think you should be hating on it.
Yeah. Yeah. So you don't be bitter, just be better.
Kind exactly. of.
Well, that's like the only reason I'm still on Instagram, is like the mashup DJs and everything. I'm just like, oh man, this stuff's so great. What was it? I think the last great one that I loved, it was Careless Whisper by George Michael and Cry Me a River by Justin Timberlake. And I was like, I'm sold. I was like, this is the only reason I'm still on the internet.
Yeah, those are two classics.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Well, I love your optimism. And yeah, I think we all have the same tools. So, I mean, and more creators, I think, is always great. You know, the people that really want to do it and the people that are meant to, you know, kind of have a big voice in it, I believe will end up that way. And so, yeah, why not just have more people making music? Then we get more music. That's always fun.
Yeah, I think the strong always prevail, and then the ones who are in it for the wrong reasons will get weeded out eventually. I'm sure some of them will slip through the cracks, but for the most part, yeah, just be consistent, stay dedicated. I think consistency is just the most important piece in all of this. If you're consistent enough and you are believing what you do, it's very cliche, but if you're consistent enough, you believe in what you do, you'll be fine.
We're here for the cliches. They're there for a reason.
Yeah.
Okay, Kai, well, thank you so much. Are you ready for your speed round?
Yeah, let's do it.
It's very low stakes, but just kind of
Okay.
whatever the first thing that comes to your mind, we're going to go through, and it's just meant to be fun.
Cool.
So, what is your go-to lazy dinner that you make for yourself?
Ooh, that I make for myself?
We'll use the word make generously. Maybe it's a microwave meal.
Probably tacos.
Ooh, that's also my go-to.
Yeah.
I love tacos. If you had to DJ a bar mitzvah this week, what are three songs that you would put in your set list?
Oh my. Let's do Don't Stop Believing by Journey.
Of
Let's
course.
do another one Bites the Dust, and
Okay.
then let's do why am I blanking on the name of the song? What's that? Was like Am Blue Dabu, that one. I
Because
forgot
I
the name
think
of it.
that title is just like I'm blue and then all the
Think
weird
I'm Blue. Yeah, I think it's called I'm Blue. Yeah. Those are my three for bar
little.
mitzvah.
That's a great mix. Classic and then just the one kind of oddball one that everyone knows and loves. That's great.
Yeah.
Who was your first celebrity crush?
Ooh. I think it was Amanda Bynes, I think.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, it was my
The
father's like
Amanda Style
Nickelodeon crush.
version.
Yeah, that's the earliest back to celebrity crush I could think.
Okay. Who do you think makes the best pizza in Brooklyn?
Ooh, good question. There's a really, really good spot by my house. It's actually around the corner. It's called Frazio's. They do like
Ooh.
this nice, like square style, like Sicilian slices. They're really, really good. It's a
Okay.
really tough question. There's so many good pizza spots. Even the ones that are like really popular, like a lot of people say they're overrated, like, but no, they're all, it's really hard to get a bad slice of pizza in New York.
Yeah. In general, isn't that something people say? It's like, even if it's a bad piece of pizza, it's still pizza. Like, it's gonna still be pretty all right.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Have you ever gotten any strange gifts from a fan or admirer?
No strange gifts. I just no strange gifts at all. Just actually not many gifts at all, now that you mention it.
Oh, no. If you're
Yeah.
watching this, you guys are
Yeah.
slacking. Bring Kai
You're
some
coming to
gifts.
my show this weekend, please, but no, I'm just kidding.
What are your requests? What any requests? What's like your favorite snack? Maybe people could bring you.
Oh, I like those barbecue Frito twists. Those are my favorite.
Those are the shit. Those are so good.
Yeah, I have to refrain from, I've gotten very healthy in the past like 2 months, and I have to refrain every time I go to the airport because it's like my travel snack. So I
Yeah.
try to avoid that.
Okay, so maybe don't bring him a whole bunch of them. And last one, you're stranded on a desert island. What three records are you bringing with you?
Ooh, let's go with The Question by Mac Miller. Equilibrium by Darius.
Ooh.
And then third one, this is a good one. Oh, this song called Avalon Dance by Mike Sharon. That kind of, actually, it's interesting. It kind of says a lot about what I listen to outside. I just like very chill vibey music outside of like what the stuff I typically make, which is funny. But you'll pretty much never catch me listening to anything but just more, like more laid back music when I'm not performing or
Yeah.
producing.
Well, it makes sense. Every other time in your life, you're surrounded by, so it
Yeah,
makes sense that you want kind of the chill.
definitely.
Well, you came up with that question, that answer actually really quickly. I'm surprised. I feel like that's one people like him and ha about a lot.
Yeah, but those are records I listen to like literally every day. Like in the morning, those are like my first three. I don't know, I just can't get tired of them.
Yeah, you did better than I'm even sitting here trying to think what mine would be, and I'm just like, ugh, I don't know. Mine maybe Grace by Jeff Buckley, and the Thievery Corporation album that they did with the Flaming Lips. That one would be really great too. And honestly, probably 1989 by Taylor Swift. I'm not even gonna lie.
Wait, I don't know the other two, but I'll check them out.
They're pretty great. Jeff Buckley, he was like a singer, like a grungy, folky singer in the 90s. He only made the one album and then he died. But 3-4 Corporation's great. They're like the two producers, and then they bring in all of these different artists from around the world, and each album is totally different. They did a Bossa Nova album, and then this one with Wayne Coyne from the Flaming Lips. They did Super Spacey and Psychedelic and Weird. But they're all just kind of like, what do people like to call them? Trip hop kind of world stuff. Cool. They're really great. Anyway.
Yeah, I'll check it out. That sounds awesome.
Well, Kai, thank you so much. This has been a lot of fun. We're really happy to have you here with us. Is there anything else that we didn't maybe cover that you want the people to know?
Yeah, I'm actually really excited about this new thing I'm going to be starting. It's a production workshop series. It's going to be run and branded by my record label, Inhera, and it's going to be a very limited seat thing where we do it's basically an all-day-long thing. We'll have a session for producing, a session for engineering, and then we'll do a session for A&Ring. And it's kind of an opportunity for people to come and meet other producers that are kind of in a similar lane and just see the process of us creating a track, engineering it, and then the process of how we would take it to record labels and like come up with like a release plan for it, as well as they'll get the opportunity to showcase their music and get our input on what could be changed or fixed and how they can present it to record labels. So I think we're going to do 15 seats, and that should be live for sale on, I think, next Wednesday. So really excited. It's going to be in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. So yeah, 15 seats. So hopefully we have so much demand we can do a second day.
Hell yeah. And that's a physical that's in Brooklyn. Y'all are doing that?
Yeah, it's all in person, full day thing, like food, everything included. We're going to give like a bunch of like a digital goodie bag away and a bunch of other fun stuff too. It's in this absolutely beautiful location in Williamsburg. It's like this big, kind of like a warehouse space, but it's very cozy. Yeah, I'm really excited for it.
Hell yeah. Well, good luck. And if anyone watching, if you're in the New York, Brooklyn area, which I know a lot of you are, definitely check that out. But Kai, thank you so much. It was great to get to talk to you and have you here, learn more about you and your label and your music here. And hopefully we'll see you soon.
Yeah. Thanks so much, guys.